Welcome to Managing Uncertainty, a podcast series from the experts at BrightPath discussing global risk, business continuity, and crisis management. Will you be ready to lead your organization through its critical moment?
Hello and welcome to the Managing Uncertainty podcast. This is our Brightcast edition for the week of July 29th, 2019. This is Brian Strauser, Principal and CEO here at BrightPath, and with me is...
Bray Wheeler, Consultant with BrightPath.
So as a reminder, the Brightcast episode is where we take a few recent events in the news and talk about their connectivity to the private sector and issues that organizations may want to be prepared with. We're going to start with an announcement this morning that China's military is holding exercises this week in waters off the coast of Taiwan. This was announced by China's Maritime Safety Agency and came just days after the government in Beijing reiterated that it was ready to fight if there was any move towards independence for the self-ruled island of Taiwan. Of course, to the Chinese, Taiwan is a, they often refer to it as the wayward province of Chinese Taipei, which is how Taiwan is referred to in international terms at conferences and such where both countries are present. China claims that it is stepping up military drills in recent years, including even flying what Beijing calls island encirclement exercises and sending warships into surrounding international waters. Bray, what does this mean for companies that operate in Taiwan?
Well, it certainly means that Taiwan is back in the news.
Yeah, it's been a while.
For China, it's been a little bit quiet. They've been, Hong Kong has kind of dominated a lot of the kind of discussion there as it relates to China as well as, you know, some of the trade stuff. So Taiwan's been a little bit under the radar here, at least for the last month or two. I mean, really for companies that are in Taiwan, probably not anything direct or immediate. However, you know, the fact that those exercises are going on, South China Sea is still a thing that's important. We have other activity in other important straits, you know, within the maritime world. So the fact that these are happening definitely could impact, could disrupt, could delay maritime shipping, commerce in those areas. Should these kind of escalate, go be prolonged, or, you know, something happens, accident or whatnot.
So Taiwan had its own military exercises in May, both air, land, and sea. Or I guess that's all three, not both. And they vowed to defend themselves against China's growing threat to their independence. China also has reiterated that it would be ready to go to war against those who try to split Taiwan from the country and accused the United States of undermining global stability and denouncing our arms sales to the island. Taiwan primarily uses U.S. equipment.
It does.
That's purchased from us.
It does.
Or purchased from our companies. I was at the Aspen Security Forum 2 weeks ago out in Colorado, and the second night of the conference, the keynote interview before the crowd was Admiral Phil Davidson, who is the commander for U.S. Indo-Pacific Command. This is the joint command that's responsible for all U.S. interests in the Pacific Ocean, including China and Taiwan. And he got a question about Taiwan, and Admiral Davidson pointed out that Taiwan is a U.S. ally, that we have treaty obligations as a country to Taiwan. But he mostly focused on the fact that a big part of what the United States Navy does in Taiwanese, in the South China Sea, maybe to be more clear about it, in international waters off the South China Sea, is continue to reinforce the freedom of navigation that is guaranteed by the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big story in South China Sea just in general is this activity, whether it's Vietnam, whether it's the Philippines, whether it's Taiwan, whether it's the Spratly Islands, that South China Sea is a major route coming out from that area. And especially as, you know, we look to shift, companies are looking to shift into Vietnam, into other areas
of
Asia, it's going to become more important, and it's going to be more of an issue as some of these countries start either to defend themselves or they run exercises. and China's trying to assert its dominance mm-hmm. in the area.
So the key takeaway here for organizations is to, if you operate in this area or you have travelers that go through Taipei or you source from countries bordering the South China Sea, is to just continue to monitor the situation between China and Taiwan. This probably never ends as long as they are separate countries or a country and its wayward province.
Next up, staying on China, but shifting back to Hong Kong and just kind of a quick update. I don't know that we want to spend too much time since we've talked quite a bit about Hong Kong here lately, but recently China has actually officially commented on the protests that are happening in Hong Kong. So Hong Kong protests have been going on for about 8 weeks now, and China has been reluctant to kind of say anything, or seemingly so. They've since come out and made, I'm trying to find the official kind of spokesman for Hong Kong and Macau affairs, commented kind of as the first kind of Chinese statement on it, calling the situation in Hong Kong grave, that the protesters were committing evil and criminal acts, has damaged the city's reputation and stability. It's the first time that China has said this, which probably isn't going to be helpful in terms of calming the situation.
I don't think it's going to be helpful at all.
No. They also use the language of Hong Kong is China's Hong Kong. Hong Kong affairs are Chinese domestic affairs. It's one country, two system model. So just reinforcing that position, that outlook or view of how they see Hong Kong is in direct contrast to what the protesters are actually protesting of, that they see themselves as, yes, they're a part of China, but they are independent and fiercely independent, that their kind of reinforcement, China's reinforcement of kind of their assertion of control, their support for the Hong Kong leader, Carrie Lam, all those things are only going to exacerbate, only going to continue this kind of protest activity that's going on.
Yeah, it seems, I don't know, this almost feels like an escalation on the part of China in that they rarely make direct commentary on Hong Kong.
They do.
So yeah. this is to me is almost an escalation of the situation, given, I mean, that's some really bluntly strong language. I don't see that making protesters go home.
No. If anything, it's just going to keep it going, which probably to China's view helps make their case mm-hmm. that Hong Kong is out of control. Hong Kong needs more governance from China. The fact that they've made kind of that direct language of Hong Kong's affairs or Chinese affairs or domestic affairs is pretty, pretty blatant in terms of where they stand on it and pretty escalatory mm-hmm. from a protester standpoint.
So the bottom line here for organizations is to continue to monitor what's going on in Hong Kong. Keep an eye on what that might mean for travelers and for your business operations in the city.
Yeah, the fact that it's been 8 weeks now, it's kind of come off the radar in terms of other things that have popped up, new topics. The fact that this is still going on, China's taking these kind of positions, means that this is probably going to continue and could only become more complicated. Mm-hmm.
So the other issue we want to talk about, and we're recording this on Monday, the 29th. You may not hear this for a few days. But the other breaking issue over the weekend into today was the mass shooting at the Gilroy Garlic Festival in Gilroy, California, which for perspective is outside of San Jose, I believe about 45 to 60 miles. Definitely not in a city. It's in a small town. And this festival, which gets about 100,000 visitors each year, there was a shooting last night involving a 19-year-old, which is just now being identified having used a rifle for this homicide. I believe that there were 12 wounded and 5 killed. Is that correct?
Yeah, I've seen mixed numbers. It's probably slightly too early. I've seen 3, but for seeing five. It's entirely possible with injuries and stuff like that.
As we're recording this press conference, as we're recording the podcast, rather, there's a press conference going on with the Gilroy police and other agencies. So there's some new information being released that may be different than what we're telling you. But part of what we wanted to talk about here was this festival poses an interesting physical security issue that we want to highlight. This festival is fenced in, from our understanding, and there was weapons screening occurring at the entrances to the festival. But what the shooter did is came around the backside of the festival, crossed a creek, and then cut the chain link fence and gained access with his weapon by those means, and then came into the festival and began shooting.
Which, you know, to these festivals and to gatherings' credit, these organizations, these events are starting to think through physical security safety, think through processes, think through mechanisms that help control some of the violence or the safety, you know, and it's not just mass shooting and things like that. You know, it could be anything from theft to riots to protests, all these kind of things that help kind of control what's happening at some of these events. The only caveat to that is it's only as the physical security kind of mechanism itself isn't enough. Mm-hmm. You have to kind of still layer yourself on. And I think that's, unfortunately, some of these organizations have to catch up a little bit. They're doing the right things, but if you're not screening the back line of the fence, then the fence doesn't do too much other than probably keep some wildlife out.
Right. So part of the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security have put out some planning guidance for mass gatherings, I think is how they worded it. But for large-scale events, and this was kind of an output of the 2017 shooting in Las Vegas at the Country Music Festival that was going on, and there were a number of issues that came out of the after-action discussion that happened around that festival. And part of this is if you decide to do as they did at this Garlic Festival and you're doing weapon screening, you need to look at the rest of your security perimeter and then take the right actions to ensure that you're adequately protecting your patrons, because that's your goal, right? I assume by doing weapon screening and other screening to keep prohibited items out or food or whatever. It's probably just as much about food as it was about
probably
weapons. But you've got to look at the whole perimeter, right? And you got to really think about defense in depth, and can't just trust that the chain link fence is going to keep the bad guy out or keep another unwanted individual with prohibited items out. You've got to look at the whole story. And I think the FBI DHS guidance really gets to that issue in terms of how they talked about planning.
Well, there's definitely issues of, you know, resource constraints and things like that too, with some of these events that, you know, security can be super expensive and it can be suck up a large chunk of, you know, some of these things' budget. They don't have to, like I said, they're doing the right things and they're thinking about it in the right way, but it's one of those, you have to make sure that some of these areas that are, you know, you're just throwing up a fence to make sure that you have something there, you have to layer on a human element to it or something else. You know, there was some talk about adding cameras and things like that, and certainly that'll probably become easier and easier as technology evolves, but I mean, camera systems are pretty expensive, and you have to have somebody monitoring it, and you have to have people watching for it. You know, if you're switching between cameras, guy cuts a fence, I mean, he can do that in a couple minutes and be in and through, and you don't see it either, depending on how you placed it. So it's making sure you're having kind of perimeter walks and things like that to at least know and identify opportunities of, hey, that wasn't there before. Hey, there's a hole in the fence. Hey, this is going on, so that you can kind of control some of that, or at least be able to react.
Yeah, and I would say, just to be clear, we're not passing judgment on the Garlic Festival. Not all the details are out, but did, as we were talking this morning, it did kind of stand out to us that you've really got to think about physical security holistically, and it can't just be about screening weapons at your points of entry. If you've got a secure area, then you've got to look at kind of your other boundaries as well.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair, because like you said, we don't know everything that was in place, but I think just generally, as organizations, as companies are thinking about these events, they're definitely softer targets. They're definitely opportunity. Not again, not just for violence. It could be for protest. It could be for theft. You know, all sorts of different things that, you know, nefarious activity that you don't want a part of, but it gets back to, you have to think about it holistically, and you have to make some decisions around the risks that are posed to you as part of that festival. Mm-hmm. You know, where you're having it, when you're having it, the crowd, is it open to the public, kind of a closed group? All those things play a factor into how you kind of layer on your security.
Mm-hmm. So bottom line for businesses, if you're holding large events or you're securing a large event, think about physical security holistically and use the tools that are given to you. There's the DHS FBI guidance on planning for large scale events and mitigating the active shooter threat at large scale events. Use that documentation. It's available on the FBI and DHS websites. That's it for this edition of Managing Uncertainty Brightcast edition. We'll be back later in the week with an additional episode focused on a single topic. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Managing Uncertainty, produced by the experts at BrightPath. To receive notifications of new episodes, join our newsletter at brightpath.com or subscribe to your favorite podcast player, such as iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about the services and trusted advice from BrightPath by visiting brightpath.com. That's BrightPath.com.